It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 82nd episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm glad you're listening. This week I've got the first part of a two-part interview with Paul Jenkins, creator of Boom Studios' popular Deathmatch comic. He talks about how the book came to be and discusses the characters at some length. We have a lot of news in the news and previews section, so be sure to listen. Gianluca Glazer joins me as always to talk about it. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Okay, I want to welcome to the podcast Paul Jenkins, well-known writer of comics and many other good things, including currently Deathmatch for Boom Studios. How are you doing today, Paul?
I'm doing great, Wayne. How are you doing?
Good. It's good to talk with you. Now, why don't we just dive right in and start talking about Deathmatch from Boom. This is a great comic. I've read the first two issues. By the time this airs, everybody will have had a chance to read both of them. And I really enjoy the book a lot. It's a lot of fun to see your take on heroes and villains and to see this whole situation, which is kind of unique. I like it a lot. There's some similarities I see to Hunger Games. I don't know if you hear that from people. But I like it a lot because it's very interesting to watch heroes be stripped away of their heroic qualities and have to fight. So I like that. Where did the concept for Deathmatch come from?
Well, you know, originally Boom connected with me and asked me if I would be interested in doing the book. They had a very, very basic concept, and it was, you know, we want to pit heroes against each other, put them in an arena, do that kind of thing. And that was really where they were going with it. That's what they had. Now, what I wanted to do, and what I always want to do, is to build worlds. And I tried to persuade them that building an entire world and kitting it out and then literally killing most every single one of them has immense value, even if it seems a bit of a shame that we're losing so many characters. The truth is that we can do things that it's very difficult for Marvel and DC perhaps to do.
Right.
I know that there is a similar project in Avengers Arena, which I don't know very much about, but I've obviously heard it because I've heard comparisons drawn. And I think the inbuilt problem perhaps with doing something like that is you kind of know who's not going to die and stay dead.
Yeah.
You feel the same way, I suppose, about Spider-Man. You know, he died, but then so did Captain America. But that being a reversible thing is always a problem for the readership, because in any story you have to suspend your disbelief, and we can't quite extend it that far.
Why don't we talk about the current situation with Spider-Man? I mean, you know, we've got Superior Spider-Man, we've got Dr. Octopus basically taking over Peter Parker's body, but every one of us in the entire universe knows that by the time the Amazing Spider-Man sequel comes out, that's going to be Peter Parker back in that body.
I suppose that's true, and I think that we knew, even as well written as the book is, or we knew with Captain America, you know, the death of Captain America, well, he's on his way back. It's like taking a bus, you know, when you take a bus away, really, you're not taking it away anywhere, because tomorrow morning you're going to be standing at that bus stop, it's going to come around in a circle, so you're really almost going in a circle. With us, once somebody's dead, they're dead for good.
Well, see, that's cool. I would much rather read a story like this because I don't know what's going to happen next. There's not going to be the galactic reset button as we used to say with Star Trek. You know, every episode would end with them in the same place where they started, because otherwise the next person couldn't write it. And that's one of the problems I think that comics have today, is the fact that we all know where we're going. But this book, you don't know what's going to happen to people, which is good. I like it a lot because of that. And I kind of enjoy, you're kind of doing little takes on heroes that are kind of fun. Like Dragonfly, to me, is kind of interesting. He's a younger superhero, and of course we're talking about Spider-Man. He has a little bit of Spider-Man to him, which I find interesting. So not only do you tell your unique story, but you actually kind of give a little bit of a hint as to what your take on some of these modern heroes might be.
Well, you know, I wrote Spider-Man for 5 years, and I've written Spider-Man before, and I'm still currently kind of in the middle of a Spider-Man project, a little bit for Marvel. So there's plenty of stuff that I have to say with Spider-Man. You know, I used to write him very differently from most people because I wrote a lot of single-issue stories with him. But I will say that, yeah, there's a little bit of Peter Parker and Benny. Mm-hmm. One thing I would point out is that, you know, don't get too comfortable with him, because he, even though we follow his voice, that has no bearing on whether or not he's going to make it. It's an interesting thing for me. Well, we're doing a couple of things that will really make people turn their heads if they follow the series, you know. And one of them would be, it really doesn't matter whose voice you get. That voice is going to change throughout the series. You're going to be getting other people's voices.
See, that's cool to me, because if Benny Boatwright actually dies and we're introduced to him and we see basically the first couple of issues apparently through his eyes, to have him actually die on us, that would be quite a nice change of pace to me. I'm not a morose kind of guy, but I like it when something happens that I don't expect. And I don't expect, based on your first couple of issues, that's going to happen to him. So if you're going to pull the rug out from under me, all the better. I like that.
Well, I didn't say I was, but I didn't say I wasn't. And that's the thing. I think there's going to be a few characters in there that we expect to see survive for a certain period of time. There's some focus on them. You know, it was an interesting thing because we did create really the NCAA basketball brackets for superheroes and villains, and we just said, let's go for it, you know. Let's create 32 of these people, put them against each other. A few of the early ones are going to have to be throwaway fights that appear in like one or two panels, and that's okay. And we'll just kind of say who made it. But once you get into things, you know, we have clear comparisons drawn between a few of the characters. Yes, Benny has a little Spider-Man in him, but he's his own unique character. He's got an inbuilt flaw in his design because, like a dragonfly, he can only fly for a minute between places, and he can literally have 1 minute flight, and then he must ground himself and fly again. If he doesn't touch something within a minute after he starts, then he falls to his death. So we built in a unique kind of power to him, mm-hmm. and a unique kind of problem. Mm-hmm. We have a guy that's clearly like a Rorschach kind of analog, the Rack.
Yes.
And it's great. He's fun to write. We get to do so much with these characters that it would be very difficult for some of the bigger companies to do.
Yeah, oh, granted. Although Rorschach is kind of it's something of a demented character, off-center character. The Rat is kind of funny because his command of English is different, and he speaks differently. And I kind of like that not everybody has perfect diction in these heroes. And I like the fact that he doesn't speak like everybody else does. He has his own dialect, as it were.
You know, that was fun with him. We have some characters that people are very intrigued by. You know, we have this character called the Glyph, who's this little creature that at the moment lives inside a glass bubble, and nobody knows why it is there except that it's one of the combatants. But they don't seem to be able to connect with it. Benny seems to be getting the closest. We have Shadow Runner, and he'll make an appearance, you know, at some point, and he's already kind of shown up. And this creature is the Phantom Stranger, maybe. I don't know. So putting all of, you know, imagine putting John Constantine, Phantom Stranger, Superman, you know, those are the fun types of mashup comics that we get to do.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And like I said, the characters are fun. When they talk to each other, it's interesting because when, like, for example, the Shade's talking to Benny, it's a very different kind of a conversation because she's not willing to give away all the secrets that Benny has been forced to do.
Right.
So he can be more open while she has to be more protected.
That's right, yeah. And I also think, you know, we have some built-in... We got a couple of really nice bad guys. A guy called the Cube, and Cube is like a... There's Cubozoid jellyfish, you know, so it's like this this kind of box jellyfish thing, and it's revolting, and he's a nasty, nasty piece of work. We have all kinds of interesting ones, because there's a guy called Sol Invictus that's very much like a Thor-type character, and he's arrogant, and really what you would like to do is punch him in the nose, actually. He's quite annoying. And then finally, I think the one part that will begin to become very, very clear is there's something behind the door. There's something behind the door, and nobody knows what it is, but whatever it is, even the people running the prison, whoever they may be, they are afraid of it. So there's something big going on, and I think what the readers will like is that very soon in the series, they're going to find out that what appears to be happening is not at all what is happening.
Okay, that's interesting. I love being led down the primrose path and then suddenly being able to find out that what I believe wasn't true at all. Now, there was a character in the first book that I was kind of fascinated by, this little character with the big eyes that was... the one you were talking about, the bubble?
Yeah, this is the Glyph. A lot of people are gravitated towards the Glyph, and they're wondering, you know, what is its power? What does it do? What's its life? Where is it from? And the answer, to some extent, is that all of them know that it has been around. Think of Marvel's The Watcher.
Mm-hmm.
They know it's there. They don't understand its intentions, and they never have. And they don't know what it's for or what its purpose is. Is it good, bad, indifferent? You know, we have Fears, which are the inferiors, and Supes, which are the superiors. So there's the bad and the good guys. And we have Mutes, which are the neutral ones. But nobody really knows what the Glyph is.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of fun. I like the fact that you're introducing characters that we don't know much about, and other ones are obviously tilts on other characters. Now, one of the things I particularly enjoy about the book is that when you get to the back of the book is where you get this grid that you were talking about. And you've got all the people, and we can kind of keep track of it. It's almost like a sports setup.
Yep.
But another thing I really like, too, is that you give backgrounds to the characters mm-hmm. at the end. Dragonfly, you talk a little bit about his powers, and you talk about Electronica and Apex and Nephilim in the first one. Is that going to be regular for every issue?
Yeah, we're going to be doing that. We've actually built them all out, every single one of them. You know, so it's funny. I mean, you got this background for Electronica, and she's dead.
Yeah.
And you got one for Apex, and he's dead.
Yeah.
These people were somebody, and I think, you know, where we're going with the story, where it's fun and interesting, is that we're really trying to say to our readers, look, we understand that you haven't read these before. We know, you know, we're not asking you to love them, but you're going to really care about them if we get it right. It brings me back to my days working on the Inhumans. At the time, you know, really that was a concept that just you couldn't give away. You couldn't give Black Bolt away. You couldn't give away the Inhumans characters. We came in and kind of really recreated that. And the one thing that we did that I feel very proud about in the Inhumans was that up until I'd written him, everybody knew that if Black Bolt spoke aloud, the world would crack in half. You know, his voice is so resonant.
Mm-hmm.
And what was a frustrating thing for me to look at was that writers tended to want to have him then speak.
Yeah.
And I say, well, you know, why do that? The whole point of the character is he's not able to speak and he's not supposed to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So writing him speaking is simply the explosion.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no tension in that. So I think that we're looking at trying to build tension in these characters. When the readers that follow the series follow the journey of Meridian and find out things that had happened, they follow the rat's little path, they follow the path of Sable, or, you know, there's a very evil character called Melody Toon who kills people with her voice. You know, there's all this crazy, crazy stuff in there.
Mm-hmm.
They'll really get a kick out of how these characters are and who they are, you know, and how they interact with each other and the difference in the twilight sort of shadowy difference between good and bad in this environment, because, you know, good and bad is the same difference between cop and psycho. They're about the same psychological profile.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I enjoyed particularly about the first issue was the way you dropped us right in the middle of the story. There's Benny Boatwright. We don't understand what he's grieving about, and then we come to find out. And from then on, we know that at any time there can be a battle. And so we're never quite sure how long these conversations are going to take or how long what's happening is going to last, because at any moment, these battles can start right back up again.
As we are, you know, as we're speaking right now, I'm working forward and I'm designing issue 6, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a scene in issue 6 that's very meaningful, and if people follow the series, they'll find it, where, in truth, two characters are becoming kind of close to each other, sharing fear, and one of them says to the other one, well, you know, right now you may be speaking and hugging like a corpse. In 10 minutes, I may be a corpse, nothing, done, finished, dead. Where do we go when we die? Don't you understand? This is high stakes. I may be dead, and then our conversation now is ephemeral. It's out the door. And now you'll be without me if I lose the next battle. And what happens if we face each other? There's such a finality to the way that we've set the story up in that regard.
See, that's cool. I like that a lot. I like not knowing what's going to happen. I like that somebody could pass off of the stage at any moment. It adds a lot of tension to the story. And so often in comics, we don't get that very often. And I really like it. So that's one of the things I particularly like about Deathmatch a lot.
Cool.
Now, we were talking a little bit before we started to record, and you were saying that you had just sent off an email regarding issue 5, and I don't know if you feel like sharing that with people or not.
Yeah, you know, I wrote to the guys because I'm on 5 and sort of about to plan 6, and so I wrote an email to the guys at Boom, and I said, the header was, I just want you to know, and then when they opened the body of text, said, Deathmatch 5 is going to be fucking awesome.
See, that's cool. I think that's a great thing.
It is. It's just a really cool balls to the wall. You know, stories and especially story arcs have like big and high moments and small. And this particular issue 5, is just stuff going nuts.
Great.
You know, and I'm not going to spoil the story, but I will say that things go a little sideways in this issue.
Oh, great, great. Well, see, that's good to know. I don't want to know. I don't want anybody to spoil stuff for me, because I'd rather read it and enjoy it myself. Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews. And with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
Doing well, Wayne.
Great, great. Let's get to the news. And I understand you have a lot of it, so why don't you go ahead and tell us what we need to know.
There is. Wayne, I got some good news and bad news for you.
Uh-oh.
You want to hear the good news first?
Yeah.
Well, Wayne, in the near future, you're going to be saving $3 a month.
Okay.
The bad news is because Hawkman has been canceled.
Oh, nuts.
Yeah.
Nuts. I like that.
Yeah, I just never found an audience. And it, you know, it went through quite a lot of changes and never quite got its feet either, you know? The original, the new DCU debut incarnation, the Rob Liefeld incarnation, then this latest incarnation. Mm-hmm. Didn't really catch people, you know, by storm.
Well, he's going to be in Justice League of America, so maybe that'll give him a chance. It'll be nice to see Geoff Johns writing Hawkman again.
Yeah, and iVampire was canceled as well, too.
I like that one.
Yeah, by Joshua Helfiako. So, he's apparently working on a new upcoming series, though. So, if you're a fan of his work, don't worry.
Okay.
All right. In movie news, Marvel Studios has confirmed that Doctor Strange movie will be part of Marvel's Phase 3. Phase 2 will include Iron Man 3, Thor: The Dark World, both in 2013. Captain America, Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy in 2014, and culminates with The Avengers Part 2 in 2015. The only film in Phase 3 that is announced so far is Edgar Wright's Ant-Man, which is slated for November 5th, 2015. So, Doctor Strange probably not coming out until 2015, 2016.
Yeah, I still think Ant-Man is not a bright idea. It's going to be silly to have this little tiny guy. It'll be like Land of the Giants back in the day.
It depends what kind of movie they try to make it, you know. Mm-hmm. It could be a welcome comedic relief to the Iron Man 3s and Thors and Avengers 2, you know, which are kind of a mixture of action and comedy, but this probably would be more comedy.
I wonder if it'll be based on, there was a comic that came out called The Irredeemable Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Well, the guy who stole the helmet was not a very good guy. If you're talking comedic, that would be the way to go.
Interesting. Oh, I got some more good news and bad news. I think
this
is the theme for today's show.
Okay.
Okay, the good news, Wayne, is that the Cartoon Network has released information on their 2013 schedule.
Okay, I know the bad news.
Yes. The bad news is that Young Justice and Green Lantern have been canceled for two new series.
Yeah, it's been a rough week. So many things have gone away, and this is one of them. I just got done watching Green Lantern and Young Justice as we're recording, and I'm going to miss those shows terribly. My hope is that maybe The Hub will pick it up. I'll pick them
perhaps
up.
Perhaps. It's hard to say. I mean, they're replacing it with Beware the Batman and Teen Titans Go. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if anybody else besides Cartoon Network have the rights for these, you know, two series.
Mm-hmm. I'm bothered by this whole thing. I'm kind of mad at Cartoon Network because they keep doing this.
Yeah.
You know, they scheduled it so poorly, and then they yanked it from the schedule for several months, and now they're canceling it, and I feel like saying, man, you guys really wanted to make sure these two shows died.
Mm-hmm.
Which is too bad, because Green Lantern is great fun. Young Justice is very thoughtful, and maybe that's the problem. Because Teen Titans Go is going to be like Ultimate Spider-Man in tone, and it's going to be much sillier and much more comedic. And I have trouble with Ultimate Spider-Man, and so I'm going to have trouble with Teen Titans Go as well.
Right.
Although they do have the original voices, which I like.
Very sorry to hear that, Wayne. You know.
Yeah, me too.
It's got to have a weird shelf life. They're usually done in mass, and then, like, afterwards they're canceled as opposed to being renewed because they take a long time to make, and costs money, and that's kind of how it goes sometimes as well, too, you know.
But they brought back some shows that I can't understand. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of these things, like The Annoying Orange and stuff like that. That is the most dumb show on television. It's just, you know, it should be called A Stupid Orange.
Okay.
Because it's just awful. I've tried to watch them, and they're just so hard to take.
I've only been in Children's Hospital, so, you know.
Can't watch any of that stuff. So, you know, the Dragons I like. A couple other shows. I like Looney Tunes well enough. It's not bad enough for me to turn it off. Every once in a while they have a really good episode, but most of the time it's just standard stuff. I think Cartoon Network really needs to, you know, they've become the almost the all Adventure Time / regular show channel. Every time I turn it on, it's not something else. It's got Adventure Time or regular show running.
Right. Well, yeah, that's probably true, you know.
Well, of course, they've got comics coming out of that, so...
Yeah, they do.
I guess they're making money. Now, the bad news about these kinds of things is everything on television is a trend. And what's going to happen is this little fad will run its course, and then all of a sudden you'll be going, whatever happened to Adventure Time?
Oh, I'm sure in 10 years' time, just like Powerpuff Girls, you know?
Yeah, well, they're bringing that back, believe it or not. They're making a new one of that.
That is true. But, you know, for... a while now, you know, that was so popular back in 2000, but by 2005, 2006, it's like, who? What?
Yeah. I saw the drawing of the new ones, and I just kind of went, yeah, that's not the Powerpuff Girls that I remember, but they've got totally new people on it, so I'm not very happy with that. But anyway, we'll give that one a shot.
Some comic news.
Okay.
Paul Giamatti is in talks or negotiations to play the Rhino in the sequel to The Amazing Spider-Man. So, Paul Giamatti, great actor, love him very much. Not his first time he's been in a comic-related movie. He actually played Harvey Pekar in American Splendor, which came out, I believe, 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Great film, great actor. Kind of weird imagining him in a Rhino suit.
They just had the Rhino on Ultimate Spider-Man, and they did something really weird with him. Instead of him being like this big guy who's wearing this concrete or something that's been grafted to him, turns out he's a young kid who's been bullied, and he wants to beat up Flash Thompson, who's the bully.
Oh.
And I thought, that is a really weird way to do the Rhino, so
yeah.
Who knows what they'll do.
In X-Men news, Anna Paquin, Ellen Page, and Sean Ashmore are reprising the roles as respectfully as Rogue, Kitty Pryde, and Iceman in Brett Ratner's... Oh, sorry, they were last seen in Brett Ratner's X-Men The Last Stand. They're reprising the roles for the new X-Men Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to start shooting later in February. Bryan Singer is going to be directing it. He's returning back into the franchise. It has already got, like, some old cast members returning as well, too, like Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, and Ian McKellen.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. It's kind of sad TV news here for the CW network.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, you know, they had high hopes for creating a Wonder Woman show, mm-hmm. similar to, like, Arrow, kind of, you know, jump in on the popularity of it. You know, I mentioned it on your show prior before, many months ago. It was going to be called Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as of now, the network is still holding a spot for a DC comic-based series. They haven't decided to do a pilot yet, so it doesn't sound very likely that there probably is one about to be made, unfortunately. Mm.
Do you watch Arrow at all?
I have not. No, I don't watch as much, like, regular TV, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say that Arrow's really good. I really am enjoying that show tremendously. Although he's got the Steve Arnell, who does the main character, he's got the same disease that the guy who played Oliver Queen before. They forget to put their shirt on all the time. We need to buy a whole bunch of shirts for him. You know, he's endlessly, even when he gets drugged in this past week by a drug called Vertigo, he still ends up on the table, and of course he has no shirt on. I feel like saying, doggone, man, we got to put a shirt on this guy. So it just makes me laugh, but I'm sure the ladies like it, but I'm just sort of like, I get annoyed every time I see him running around without a shirt and going, you know, you could put a shirt on there, Buster. But I guess he works hard on his chiseled abs, and so he needs to.
I guess he's got to show them off, you know, while he can.
I guess, yeah, because the time will come when they won't be quite so chiseled, and You'll have to worry about that. But anyway, I like Arrow real well. The comic is coming out based on it. They have a digital version, and it comes out in print version every once in a while. So I like the show. I really, I'm very surprised how much I like it. They got away from the Smallville chatty stuff, and it's much more of a story-oriented thing, so I like it.
As soon as it's on Netflix streaming, I'll check it out.
Okay.
In movie news, Fox has acquired the film rights to Dark Horse's Mind Management.
Yeah.
MGMT, I mean, by Matt Kind, according to The Hollywood Reporter. Ridley Scott is attached to produce, although he's not going to be directing it, along with publisher Mike Richardson and Keith Goldberg. Yet, so far, no writer has been assigned or due to script for it.
I had to put Matt Kind writing it.
Perhaps. We'll hope so. IDW has announced an agreement with 20th Century Fox to bring back the X-Files comic book series. They're going to be reprinting the old original series from 1995 to 2009 by Topps and Wildstorm, as well as creating a new ongoing X-Files comic book series that will debut in June of 2013. The new X-Files comic book series will pick up the X-Files narrative in continuity after the end of the second X-Files movie. Wow. that's like a lot of... that's definitely not a jumping-on-point book.
No, the last X-Files comics and the last X-Files movie were kind of a disappointment.
Yeah.
You know, they focused more on the Mulder and Scully relationship, which a lot of ladies like, but a lot of the guys are going like, not that, anything but that. You know, what made the X-Files popular was the fact that they had very unusual circumstances happening. And wonderful and weird things were coming along. And, I mean, Mulder and Scully got the tar beat out of it many times. So I think that they're going to have to go back to that original thing.
It's hard. I mean, it's been a long-running franchise. It was so popular in the 90s and early 2000s. But everything eventually, you know, has to end, expire. And this thing keeps, you know, I guess kind of trying to be dug up from the grave, you know? And speaking of digging something up from the grave from the 90s, Square Enix Studios, their Crystal Dynamics Studios and Dark Horse Comics have partnered to create a Best Buy exclusive Tomb Raider comic tied to the March 5th release of the latest video game in the franchise. The latest video game in the franchise is simply called Tomb Raider. I guess they're going to try to fool you into thinking it's like a new game or the original or something. So this is an origin story, because we all want to mine those now. She's after being stranded as a sole survivor in an island in the Dragon's Triangle. Tomb Raider, The Beginning, a 48-page, 6-part hardcover, is the first installment of a new ongoing series. It will be free for consumers that pre-order the Tomb Raider game at Best Buy. Any memories of that game?
No, honestly, I didn't play that. That's, you know, when it comes to video games, I'm not much up on those, but I'm familiar with the franchise, you know, the movies they did, which, of course, came out of the video games.
Yep.
So I'll be curious to see how that goes. You know, franchises don't lay dead very long these days. Once they kind of filter out, then people come back and say, oh, we haven't done that in a year or two. Let's do that again.
Yep.
So we'll see.
All right. In corporate shakeup news, Viz Media Executive Vice President of Publishing, Alvin Liu, has left the company. Liu had been promoted to that position last year, although he'd worked with the company for like 13 years total. Liu has been one of the top executives reporting to former CEO Hideki. Yes. Oh, interesting there. Hideki Fukuhara before Fukuhara's departure last year, and his replacement with Ken Sasaki. Shake up going on there. I'm wondering if they're going to replace the position or just have. Right now they have like a marketing guy and somebody else kind of filling in for the role. So I wonder if they're even going to replace the position or just have these guys fill in the rest of the time.
It could be.
Hard to say. And then big DC news. You know, Marvel has been killing it with the Marvel Now. So DC, how do we get sales? Good stories. three characters.
Mm-hmm.
No, mm-hmm. We're going to do a big promotional event with a bunch of Gatefold covers.
Mm-hmm.
So, the promotional event, this has to be the worst name ever for a promotional event.
Mm-hmm.
Wade, what is the name of the promotional event?
WTF.
WTF, which stands for What the Fridge.
Yeah, but the frack is happening in here. It's what they're doing is they're trying to make something significant happen in every issue. The criticism of comics, of course, just like a lot of soap operas and other TV shows, is that nothing happens in the comic. So what they're trying to do is make something significant take place. And they've got some spoilers out already. Booster Gold's supposed to be involved in some of this stuff. And other things, but some teams are going to disappear. Like I think Stormwatch is going to vanish, other groups.
Let me give you the list of all the weird, what the frick things that are happening.
Mm-hmm.
And using that title is just so lame. I think WTTF. It's just like back in the 90s when everyone was using Extreme and X, and their stuff. So Booster Gold, as you mentioned, reappears while an entire team disappears. One team is trapped in a bottle while another is changed completely.
Mm-hmm.
Some heroes change their colors and others change allegiances.
Mm-hmm.
Pandora battles to the death, a close encounter of the Dark Knight kind. There's a new old creeper and some new gods. And then one hero quits and another hero dies.
Mm-hmm.
That is the list of cryptic what TF is going on here.
I actually have an idea or two about a couple of these things.
Yeah.
A close encounter of the Dark Knight kind. When I interviewed James Tynan IV recently,
yes,
he gave a hint that the Dark Knight was going to encounter Talon.
Interesting.
So I'm thinking that's what they're referring to. Yeah, I think that's what they're referring to. I think that'll be he's not busy with that. And as far as Talon quitting, and maybe that the Batman kind of insists that he quit. And although Batwing is supposed to be the one that quits, and so we'll see. And it's going to be interesting to see what goes on with it. Talon is a great one, great book. There's no way in the world they're going to cancel that because it's selling well.
Right.
So those are my guesses on that. And of course, the Creeper. I'm anxious to see the Creeper. I always liked the Creeper. I thought it was a crazy little character, but there's some good stuff in there. I'm just going to be fascinated to see what we get out of this. I don't blame them for wanting to do a monthly event kind of thing, because they've had their Zero issues, which were a big monthly event.
Yeah, and the new 52 was a big monthly event, and Marvel now is kind of stretching their monthly event, so they have to, as much as we hate monthly events, that's what sells. And if they want to be on top of the market, they have to do a monthly event.
Mm-hmm.
Forget good characters, forget good stories, forget dynamic creative teams. What the sheep flock to and buy are big monthly events.
Well, collectors like to collect them because they are, you've got a contained thing that takes place within 1 month, and you know what's going to happen, of course, with the WTF month, just like they've done with all these other events, is they'll put a huge $150 book of them all out so that they can sell those. That may be a way to get their money in that way.
Yeah.
They've had the Zero issues and the first issues. They've got another one coming. Well, like that Court of Owls one is coming, which I'm anxious to see. I'm probably going to try to, if I can ever afford it, I'm going to try to get it on eBay because they're usually much cheaper.
Yeah.
But lots of interesting stuff. But this is DC trying their very best to. They've got the Age of Ultron or whatever it is going on over in Marvel, so it's not like this is something unusual.
So I forgot they have to counteract that big event as well too.
It kills me that people criticize DC when they do this, while Marvel is Age of Ultron. Oh, we've all got to get in and buy that. It's going to be wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't understand that.
Now, Age of Ultron, both these companies have been doing this for years.
Yeah.
Crossover event.
Yep.
On to much happier news, though. Comixology has announced a deal with Delcourt to distribute the company's titles in French on the Comixology platform. That means now you can start getting some French comic books, or at least French adaptations if you're a French reader or speaker.
Ooh la la.
Yes. Pari vous français.
Yeah.
The new relationship launched with the release of a new version of Comixology's The Walking Dead app for iOS devices that will include a French language interface in all of Delcourt's French language editions of the title, including Volume 17, which was released in French this week. French editions of The Walking Dead will also be available across the Comixology platform on all operating systems. I wonder what the French think of The Walking Dead.
I don't know. The way that things are going over in France these days, they're probably very familiar with The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Their economy's in a bust, and everything's going terrible, and they're trying to tax some people 75% of their income. So The Walking Dead are all over the place over there, I think.
Yeah. I wonder if they're just happy to see, like, Americans getting eaten up by, like, undead creatures or something.
Yeah, what's new about that?
All right, and then this guy has the worst wife in the world, okay? Just terrible. His name is Christian B., and he's been sentenced to 3 years in prison without parole, followed by 5 years of supervised release in a federal obscenity case involving possession of comics. Now, no details were ever released on exactly what he had, but apparently it was something that was deemed child pornography-like, basically involving, I guess, young kids having sex with adults. Not sure the exact ages, or, I mean, I'm pretty sure this was probably a manga book, manga stuff he was having. But anyway, so, yeah, his wife found it on the computer and I guess turned him in.
Oh.
Lovely relationship there. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Western District of Missouri announced the sentence in a press release. B was represented by a public defender and pled guilty to obscenity charges to avoid a possible longer sentence on child obscenity charges. The Comic Book Legal Defense Fund did not become aware of the case until B had already pleaded guilty in October. He never contacted them. They basically found out in the news. The case is another based on the criminalization of virtual child pornography, written or drawn depictions under the Protect Act. You know, I hope this time, you know, when he goes to divorce court, he actually does pay for a lawyer as opposed to a court appointed one.
Might be worth his money.
Might be worth his money. I mean, okay, maybe this guy is a sicko. Who knows? But come on, your own wife. Turning you in. I mean, good Lord, couldn't she just, you know, divorce you? Couldn't she just put you on probation? Anything other than, you know, turning somebody in to the cops.
Yeah, I don't know.
And she has to, like, cover up the crime and live with this horrible dark secret, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, good Lord.
Reminds me of the lady with the knife who cut off was one of her boyfriend's vital parts, and then
it's the old John Wayne Bobbitt.
Yeah, that story.
So that is it for news. I hear you have a few stories yourself.
Yeah, I've got one or two. You talked about an app for Walking Dead. Well, now the word is that the Star Trek Into Darkness app has been released.
Oh, interesting.
There's a comic, the first issue of which is a prequel, has come out. So we're going to be having the Star Trek app. It's going to be from Qualcomm Incorporated. It's going to let you go through missions, and as you go through missions, you're given points. You can use those points to enter sweepstakes and win prizes. There's supposed to be a surprise that will be unlocked on the app during the second quarter of the Super Bowl, which, of course, that happened already. But in addition to the missions, there is a section where you can read the latest news about Star Trek Into Darkness. Now, the bad news is I've tried to find that app, and I can't find it. Hopefully by the time this airs, I'll have found it, but kind of interesting. It's just a very simple-looking app with a Star Trek original font everywhere and stuff. So it's just that kind of thing. Now, the other news is that the previews has come out.
Yeah.
And I'm going to talk about a couple of brief things real quickly, just because some of them drive me nuts and some of them interest me. There's from Marvel, they're picking up on TV-related comics. They've had Castle, a comic before the storm. That's going to come out in 2 months, and that'll end that miniseries. Peter David wrote that, so I guess if you want to support Mr. David, you can buy that book. There's also a book based on the show on the cable network Showtime, from Dexter, and I wish they had bought somebody who could actually get the likeness of Michael Hall. It doesn't look anything like Michael Hall on there.
Terrible.
I don't know who decided this guy actually looks like Michael.
He's been on for like 7 years now.
Yeah, you'd think they could find somebody who could draw the character to look like the actor, but apparently not. It's written by the New York Times best-selling author of Dexter, Jeff Lindsay. But the truth of it is that this doesn't, you know, that's just too distracting. I can't buy a book in which the character doesn't look anything like that he's supposed to. So that's out as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, had the rights to Jeff Lindsay's series of stories, but maybe not Showtime in the likeness of Michael C. Hall.
Maybe, you know, because that's what they'll do sometimes. They'll have to do that when that happens.
Be cheap.
Now, speaking of Star Trek, you talked about IDW. They're also coming out with a Star Trek, the John Byrne Collection.
Oh.
A mere $49.99. Now, for a while there, he was drawing all kinds of Star Trek comics.
Is this the artist edition book?
It is a hardcover. Other than that, they don't say artist edition on it.
Oh, okay.
And what's happened is the cover is actually quite smart. There's actually a drawing of ships from Star Trek, and don't we all love the Star Trek ships,
yeah,
in the shape of the logo, you know, that thing that they wear in their chest. They've got the ships in that shape, which is kind of neat. So I kind of like that. I might actually have to try to pick that one up because I like it real well.
Nice.
Now we move to Image. There's a book that I really like, and I'm surprised that I like it, called Clone. Written by David Schulner and Aaron Ginsberg and Wade McIntyre. Well, that's a lot of people. No wonder the story's good. They got three people doing it.
That's not always a good thing, but
yeah, sometimes it's a mess. But this one's actually quite good. We get to see people that clone. They don't come out exactly like they were originally.
Hmm.
And now what's happened is they have basically, you know, they've got a whole army of people that look like they're the same, but they don't act the same. And I like that. I like the idea that if you were a different body, you might actually be able to, you know, function in other ways. And I just think that's such a cool idea. I've been buying the book, and I've been very happily buying it and reading it, so it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
So let me do a couple other quick things here.
Okay.
The guy that's taking over Swamp Thing, Charles Soule, and I bet I'm fracturing his last name, S-O-U-L-E,
mm-hmm,
he did a book called Strange Attractors, and that's coming out from Arkea.
Oh, wow.
As a creator of 27, I never read that either, so I'm going to have to try to catch up on some of these things.
Yeah, okay, it puts out good stuff.
Yeah, I like the things, and they also put hardcovers.
Didn't you do a book with Image called 27 or something?
Yeah. Yeah, I need to get that, too. Somehow I got to find these things. That's going to be tough. I'm going to have to see if there's digital versions. I always have real trouble finding things when it comes to stores, especially something that's obscure. It's really difficult to find.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about Archie, and they have their Red Circle line, which I can never find because talk about the obscure books. I never can find that locally.
Yeah.
They're coming out with a miniseries called New Crusaders Dark Tomorrow Number 1.
Hmm.
So I'm going to have to try to track that down. That may be one I'll have to buy digitally as well. I just could never find the original, and so I ordered the hardcover or trade paperback, and that's supposed to come out in a couple months.
Say, speaking of Archie and, like, a superhero Archie line, whatever happened to that Stan Lee? Wasn't there a Stan Lee superhero series Archie was publishing as well, too?
Yeah, Mighty Seven or something like that it was called. I don't see it anywhere. I haven't seen it in a while. Now, of course, he took time off.
I'm either, but I wonder, was it just a short miniseries or one shot, or what happened?
I have a feeling it just sort of quietly went away.
Yeah.
I could never find the book, and that means that if my whole area, nobody's buying it, it's very likely that there weren't a lot of orders, and they probably very quietly said to Mr. Lee, well, you made yourself a character in your own comic, so guess what? We're not going to do that anymore.
Well, maybe they decided Red 7 was a more viable, cost-effective means of having a superhero series.
That's what I'm figuring. That's what I'm figuring. So, and I think that's it. And I did want to mention, by the way, while we were
in Boom, just out of curiosity.
Well, the usual Boom stuff is in there. I, of course, like Boom, and I buy a lot of their stuff. The Kaboom, of course, the Adventure Time stuff is in there. There's plenty of that. In the regular show, they're promoting that book, which we've talked about in the past.
Yeah.
Garfield's in there. There's a book, Hellraiser stuff. The Hellraiser to Dark Watch number 3 is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Fanboys versus Zombies number 13. Polarity number 1 from Max Bemis and Jorge Coelho is out. Orphans, which I haven't read yet, but that's Michael Alan Nelson, so I'm going to have to Everybody get that one. He's actually writing a DC book, too, if I remember correctly.
That is correct.
He's doing Teen Titans, I think, or one of those books.
It's not a Teen Titans, but it's called, I can't remember, Ravagers or something.
Oh, maybe he's doing Ravagers, yeah, because I saw his name on it, and I went, oh, man. And I read the book, and it was very good, just the usual Michael Allen Nelson, which is always a very interesting and good story going on. So I thought very much of that, and I wanted to make sure I mentioned that, because I've interviewed him a couple of times, and he's always a good guy to talk with, always fun to...
Maybe we could have him on and talk about this new series with you.
Yeah, that would be fun, because it's just such a good thing to have him, and he does have a nice way of expressing himself, so I like that very much. I'm doing a real quick... Yeah, Ravagers is the one he's on,
yeah.
And it's very good. I like the way he's doing it. He does really good stuff, and then, of course, Deathmatch is out, too, so... Anyway, I did want to mention, too, while we were talking, I had put in a search engine for that Star Trek Into Darkness app. If you say Star Trek Into Darkness, nothing comes up. But if you say Star Trek, you'll get a new Star Trek app. So I just downloaded it. I'm going to put it on my devices, and I'll let people know what I think of it. But don't say Star Trek Into Darkness, because you won't find it. It'll say there's nothing there. Yeah. Just say Star Trek.
Just Star Trek.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Live long.
Anyway.
All right.
Let's move into the previews. What books are coming that you're looking forward to, Shanmuka?
Sure. On sale February 13th, 2013. Boom Studios got some good stuff. We were talking earlier about Cartoon Network. Well, they have the Adventure Time, Fiona and Cake, number one, second printing, if you on the original one.
Mm-hmm.
Bravest Warrior, number five, comes out, and it's got four different covers.
Wow.
We also have a second printing of Deathmatch number one, if you didn't get a chance to pick up the book.
Now, that's drawn by Tom Derenick, according to my little notes. And he's the guy that lives in my home community up in northeastern Pennsylvania.
Sure.
Good artist.
Nice. You've interviewed her, Grace Randolph. She's
going
to be a number four coming out with three different covers.
Okay.
And I don't know what this is, but it's Planet of the Apes special. Maybe it's an annual that's coming out. Paul Azaceta does one of the covers. I've promoted a book of his before. He's a really great artist, but he's doing a cover, a B cover.
It's supposed to be this is Daryl Gregory Returns.
Oh, that's cool. I miss him, you know, in this series.
Yeah, it says, when the lawgiver, the revered ape leader, was assassinated, Ape City fell into vicious civil war. 10 years have passed, and little did they know that the humans and the apes, I guess this is a continuation of the regular ongoing book, and it's going to be a collision course between the two groups and a greater danger that either of them can imagine, either group. So that's what we got.
Right. Over on Dark Horse side, you know, I love anything that's, like, Dracula-related. But, man, I looked this up because the name stuck out to me, and I don't think it looks good at all. I could be wrong. It's a reprint. It's Curse of Dracula hardcover edition for $15. So, the description is, The Curse of Dracula is back in this deluxe new hardcover edition. A mysterious, charismatic figure is moving amongst the circles in San Francisco's political elite. When Jonathan Van Helsing, really? Jonathan Van Helsing? And his team of vampire hunters come to town investigating a string of grisly murders. They know it's only a matter of time before they come face to face with the Master of the Dark. Previously unseen sketches by legendary Gene Colan. So, there you go.
Yeah.
The cover just looks terrible. I don't know what the interiors look like, but I think Dave Stewart's a colorist on it, too. But
yeah,
no, not for me.
No, me either.
Got most things Dracula-related. Dark Horse does have something appealing, though. Wars number two. The first issue went to third printing, so.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, suck Marvel. And then we get The Strain number 11, second to last issue of this long-running series from Guillermo del Toro, Chuck Hogan, David Lapham is the actual adapter of the comic book form. So, yes. And, yeah, The Strains actually was a series of three books by Del Toro and Hogan. So I wonder if this Strain series only covered the first book.
Could be.
We might have two more year-long running miniseries.
It'll depend on sales, I bet.
Yes, that's true. Over on the DC side, I'm going to let you talk all the Bat stuff, but I did want to mention that there is the Batman, the Night of the Owls hardcover book coming out for $30.
Mm-hmm.
We have Before Watchmen, Comedian, number 5 of 6. J.G. Jones is, I believe, the artist on it, and he does the regular cover, while there's a Gary Frank variant and a J.G. Jones combo back covered.
Mm-hmm.
Django Unchained number 2 goes on sale. I'll let you cover the rest of the DC stuff. Over on Dynamite, we have a lot of Bionic going on.
Mm-hmm.
Bionic Man and Bionic Woman number 2. Seems a while ago since issue 1 came out. Could be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it comes out. It's got 4 different covers. I think 2 of them are incentive covers.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have Kevin Smith's Bionic Man number 16. Mike Mayhew does like a regular and Vergent variant cover. He's a great artist. I like him.
Right.
Jonathan Lau. Oh, speaking, going back to Bionic Man versus Bionic Woman number 2. Jonathan Lau does a regular cover. He's a really talented guy.
Mm-hmm.
Over on IDW's side, who are we going to resurrect?
Yeah, the Ghostbusters. Like I said, every franchise gets resurrected after a couple of years.
That's right. What I found most interesting is this, okay? There's 4 variants, covers, okay? A, B, C, and D. They're all done by the same artist. They take it 4 different times to, like, you know, do a cover. I don't know. Maybe it's, like, part of a puzzle that you put all 4 together and makes one big picture. I don't know. That would make sense. Otherwise, why would you pay the same guy 4 different times?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a retailer incentive cover by the, I can't pronounce, Zermanico. And then, I don't know, a sub cover by Dan Schoening.
What's a sub cover?
I don't know either.
Okay.
It's cover sub, SUB. Maybe it's an acronym for something like RI's retailer incentive. Maybe it's a subscriber. Maybe you have to be a subscriber to get this.
How do you be a subscriber?
It's
a subscription variant, all right. It's what it's telling me.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. There we go. My powerful detective skills have figured that out.
Yeah.
We also have a trade of the first story arc of the new Mars Attack.
Mm-hmm.
Mars Attacks Volume 1, Attack from Space. That's actually kind of entertaining. I like it. And then if you missed out the first 3 times it came out, you can now pick up the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic number 1, covers A through F, 4th printing. So,
man.
Yes, if you spent money 3 different times buying 6 different covers, you get to do it all over again.
Wow. The bronies or whatever they are probably collecting them by the boatloads.
But you got to have them all, you know. You got to sell all 1st through 4th printing of every single cover. You got to have. I'm surprised there's no box set. Usually they don't sell a box set as well, too.
Yeah.
But and then there is the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic issue number 4, which has 2 regular covers and a retailer incentive and. Amanda Connor, a well-known artist and wife of Jimmy Palmiotti, she does the cover B and the retailer incentive cover as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. Then we got Image Comics, where America's Got a Release Date. I mean, America's Got Powers, number 5 of 6.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. It just seems like a short while ago that America's Got Powers, number 4, went out.
Yeah.
I guess it must be back on track. Maybe we'll get the last issue fairly soon.
Yeah, I've actually caught up on that series, and I like it. It's a well-written idea. It's based on kind of the Hunger Games meets American Idol setup. And it's actually quite nice. It's got some interesting, vibrant characters in there, so I like it.
Yep. And then We have issue 3 of Cyberforce, which was, it was a relaunch of the old series, and this was an interesting project. I actually heard about this. I was like in a lunch meeting with industry people, and when this thing, I first discovered about it, and this was before it was announced, but yeah, basically it's free. It's the first story arc, the first 5 or 6 issues are free. They did a Kickstarter fund. They raised money to do the artwork and get the book printed and get it to retailers. Retailers had to pay a shipping fee for the books that they order, but other than that, they didn't have to pay like a cover price or anything. And they're supposed to make their money back. They're supposed to give these books for free. And you have 3 different covers, 2 by Mark Silvestri and 1 by Stefan Sejic. But they're supposed to be like, retailer incentive covers that they can, get for free when they order a certain amount of money and sell for profit. So, I'm not sure how successful that's been. It's been a kind of an interesting marketing strategy, because their hope is that these books do very, very well because they're free. I think maybe even the trade might be free. I don't know. But they're hoping that the second series, starting with issue either 6 or 7, when they do start charging money, is going to do very well because there'll be like a fan base of getting the free stuff built in. So we'll see how that works out.
Okay.
All right. I hope you understood all that.
I'm trying to digest it, so.
Yes. They raised money Kickstarter. They made the book free. Retailers only had to pay shipping. But retailers, so they kind of get a little bit of a loss because they paid for shipping. They didn't have to actually buy the book. They give the book away for free, but they're supposedly going to make their money back by selling actual for dollars. Retailer incentive books that they get for free. They order a certain amount. So,
okay, that makes some sense, because Kickstarter seems to be a big deal these days. They're doing a lot of books that way. Mark Andrew Smith did that with Sullivan Sluggers via them, and they're supposed to be putting that out in a trade eventually. So I'm not surprised that they did that in a way to try to get people to buy, to access them, and then be able to pick it up. If they like what they see, then they'll buy it.
Yeah, and they didn't do this for just like the first issue of Cyberforce. They did this for the first story arc, which I think is either 5 or 6 issues. So I think it's 5 issues. So issues 1 through 5, completely free to the fans. And they're hoping that this builds enough of an interest for when they do start charging money with issue 6.
Cool.
So we'll see how that works out. It's kind of a very unique marketing strategy there.
That'll change the way comics are done if this takes off.
May not pan out because, there is value in paying for things. Elephant Man number 46 comes out. I mentioned this because Richard Starkin's been doing this for a long time. Popular series, 46 issues. It's like, it's halfway there of Walking Dead almost. Fatale number 12 by Brubaker. Normally this series would have ended when initially announced, but it's an ongoing series now.
Cool.
Storm Dogs number 3, which I've been looking forward to, and this has been a bit of a delay, a month or two delay since issue 2. Like a month or two delay from when it would normally have gone out, the issue 3. But this is a great science fiction story with David Hein. Great interior artwork, and maybe that's what slowed down the release of issue number 3. But definitely check it out. It's kind of like got a murder mystery thing going on with there's an investigation on this planet where, some people have mysteriously died. It's like a mining planet, and really cool story. Really like David Hein, and especially love good science fiction. So Storm Dogs. And then we have a couple of Walking Deads. We got The Walking Dead 107 and The Walking Dead The Governor Special.
Okay, you know why those are coming out?
Sure, because the series is coming back soon.
Yeah, it'll be on some. I think it's coming weekend, but we'll see.
Yeah.
But keep your eye on AMC. Believe me, my TiVo has been full of all these series where they run every episode in sequence, and my poor TiVo gets jammed up to the teeth with them, so I have to go through, and especially if I've seen them, I have to take them out.
Yeah.
But they're running a lot of those marathons, so it'll be back before long.
So, yeah, second half of season number 3 on the air soon. governor, big storyline, so obviously the governor special makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. And then over on Marvel Comics side, I'm snagging this one for you from Daredevil by Mark Waid, Volume 1 hardcover.
Oh,
$35 though. Mm-hmm. Kind of pricey. Hopefully it covers a lot of issues. Stephen King's Dark Tower, The Gunslinger Shimi's Tales, number 2 of 2, goes on sale. And then we have some issue number 1's going out, New Avengers second printing, if you missed out the first time around. Mm-hmm. Power Bureau number 1, sounds interesting.
Actually, that's Powers Bureau. That's
Bureau is correct.
Now, Powers is that series that Michael Oeming does, and I think this is based on that.
Ah, so it was previously solicited, didn't come out, and it's been re-solicited, and it's finally out. So check that out if you're interested. And then we have our Marvel Nows. We have Secret Avengers. Wait.
Hmm? It's a secret, yeah. Coming up with it, the secret.
Joe Quesada does like a couple of incentive covers. We got you the Young Little Babies cover.
Oh, not again.
Tom Coker does the regular cover. I love Tom Coker. So he kind of was doing a lot of stuff in 2011. He kind of disappeared, you know, in 2012. So I'm glad he is back. Mm-hmm. You know, Joe Chen's another one, did a lot of stuff 2010, 2011, and then kind of disappeared a little bit in 2012, so hopefully we'll see her sometime soon. Mm-hmm. But Tom Coker, yeah, maybe I'll pick up. That's a case where I'd rather pick up the regular cover than the blank variant and some of these others. Mm-hmm. And then the other Marvel Now title is the Uncanny X-Men number 1.
Mm.
And we got our... very funny Birdpool 53 State Birds variant cover where they're all covering Deadpool on the page. Have you seen the image for that?
No, I've been avoiding that.
It's very funny, and it's a dig at the new 52.
Oh.
You know, with like, it basically, you know, having 53 birds. Mm-hmm. The State Birds, you know, on the cover. Because I think, wasn't there some kind of promotional thing DC was trying to do with 52 different covers or a 50 state kind of cover deal or one cover for every state or something?
I don't remember that, but they might have.
There was something going on, and basically this is Marvel's funny witty response in regards to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a dig at DC. I don't remember the particulars, but it is. Trust me.
Okay.
All right. And then that's it for me.
All right. Let me go down some of my stuff that fascinate me. As far as Marvel goes, you've mentioned, I think, the one that interests me the most.
Daredevil.
So, yeah, that's going to be something interesting to see. Then we get to Image Comics, and then, of course, there is... Clone number 4, we talked about that during in the preview section. And then also there's Hoax Hunters number 7, which I really like. Manhattan Projects number 9, which is good, Jonathan Hickman. And then Morning Glories number 24. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of good stuff coming up from them. IDW has the trade paperback, the second volume of Star Trek The Next Generation, Doctor Who, Assimilation Squared. I was hoping that was going to be a hardcover, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen, unfortunately. We get the Dynamite, and I'd be remiss if I didn't include Warlord of Mars, Deja Thoris, number 22, mm-hmm. which is a good book. I like that quite a lot. We get up to DC, and let me run down real quickly the stuff that I'm fascinated by. The Amy Comey Girls, number 5 of 5, the Palmiotti and Gray team writes that, which is pretty good. Mm. I have a very different take on the superheroes. Batgirl 17, Batman 17, that's the book of the week. That's going to be the conclusion of the Death of the Family stuff. So stand back for that one. That's going to be a big one.
Wow.
Then we have Batman and Robin 17, Batman Arkham Unhinged number 11. We've got the Night of the Owls hardcover for $30. At this point, I'm probably going to hold off on that because I want to get the big Court of Owls book,
sure.
which will come out later, so I'm after that. Green Lantern, the animated series, number 11, which now that the show's been canceled, I'm going to enjoy the book as long as I can. There's a number one, interesting, from DC called Katana, which is based on one of the characters that started in The Outsiders and has kind of worked her way through the DC universe. Her husband's spirit, supposedly, when he died, inhabited her sword. So that's kind of a good one. And then, of course, there's Ravagers, we talked about with Michael Alan Nelson, which is really good. Suicide Squad number 17, Superboy 17, Team 7 number 5, and a book I really like, Threshold. Keith Giffen did that. He wrote the last one, and he had some interesting stories in there, which I really liked. So Threshold number 2 is out. And those are the books that I'm looking forward to. Anything else we should talk about before we call it quits?
I think we've talked way more than enough.
Okay, on that note, we will call it quits for this week, and we'll talk again next week. Thanks again, as always, Gianluca.
Oh, thank you, Wayne.
And that's it for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when we can wrap up my interview with Paul Jenkins. He talks more about the state of comics and dishes more on Deathmatch, so I'm sure you're going to want to be listening. But until then, keep reading your comics.
What's that?
Another tumbler? Oh, you wouldn't be interested in that.
This baby works just fine.
So what do you think?
Does it come in black?